Welcome to Inside Groove, the only motorsports show where super modifieds are king, methanol is aromatic, and the drivers carry their balls in a bag. Inside Groove is powered by IPC Indy, creating performance parts and solutions for the automotive, aerospace, and communications industries. Here's your host and fellow superholic, Race Chaser Media's Tom Baker.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Inside Groove. I do believe this is the 55th Inside Groove, episode 55, if you will, since we brought it back last year. My name is Tom Baker, and I am happy to be your host once again this week. I really wasn't sure, to be honest, what I was going to do with this week's show. I had some different opportunities, and I thought, you know, it may be a good opportunity to just kind of sit back with somebody, relax, and talk racing in a different sort of way without necessarily a one-to-one interview per se about somebody's story or whatever. And before I could really figure out exactly who and how and where I wanted to take the show this week, I ended up talking with Larry Trinka about some things. He was interested in a certain program, old Eagle program, for a certain reason, and asked me if I had a copy of it, double of it, that I could send over to him. And in the process of that, we got talking about why he wanted the program, and I said, well, this would make an interesting kind of themed show. Since we're getting close to Classic, and we don't know what the status is going to be of the Classic as yet, and we all think we know, but we don't know for sure. It's not official. And we're all holding out some slim hope, I suppose, that somehow this could all happen. We kind of sit and wait. So I thought, well, I still want to do some sort of a Classic preview. But in lieu of that this week, this other situation came up. So Larry Trinka is going to be with us in a moment. Once again, Larry will be a repeat guest here. This will be his second time in the groove, if you will. And Larry and I are going to talk about Steve Gioia and his first feature win in 1975, which happened to coincide with the 25th anniversary night of the Oswego Speedway. And we're going to kind of deep dive into the win, into what that season was like, what was going on around it, you know, just all of that. And I'm sure plenty of talk about Steve and the cars that he's restoring, and not Steve, but Larry is restoring of Steve's one he already has restored, and he's got that 1975 car that's in process. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of conversation about that, but I thought it would be just a bit of a trip down memory lane, if you will. So we're going to get to that, and then I'll wrap up the show with a little bit of a preview of what's going on at Lee, which will be happening almost in current time as the show debuts. So with that being said, I first want to say thank you to Jeff West and all of his staff at IPC Indy, IndyPerformanceComposites.com. And I want to also say a special thank you to Sean Cathcart and his staff at Skip's Fish Fry, best fish in the city of Oswego, hands down best fish in the city of Oswego. And also to J&S Paving, Rich Worth and the folks. We've got plenty of our guys in New England. Some are at Lee running with the big blocks, and Mike Bruce and several others of the 350 division are all running with the small blocks this weekend as well up there. So fun stuff going on, and we'll get started with all of it right after this.
Victory Custom Trailers is the place to go for your next new or used trailer or coach. Being personally involved in the racing community allows Victory to fully understand what racers need in a trailer. They have over 200 coaches and trailers in stock for a variety of industries, and they can serve anyone in the continental U.S. If you're looking for something custom, they can assist in designing a trailer to fit your needs. Check out their entire inventory online at Victor.
Welcome back to Inside Groove as we continue with the program. And joining us on the strutmasters.com hotline is, for the second time in this sort of new chapter in Inside Groove history, Larry Trinka. And Larry joins, I think, Jeff Abel and Shu Tu as the only returning guests that I can think of right off the top of my head. But Larry is certainly the first non-driver who is returning to the show. And I love that because Larry and I are great friends and I appreciate his friendship dearly. And we have so much in common in the sense that, like a lot of the rest of you who are listening, we're both hopelessly addicted to super modifieds and especially the 70s. And Larry reached out to me the other day because he was looking for a particular program, and I don't know, Larry, if you want to go there exactly. Oh, I guess we do, because it's really the central theme of why we're doing this show. So I guess we could go there. So he was looking for the program that Gary Reichert is on the cover. It's from 1975, volume, what did you tell me, 12, number 15, I think was what it was. And yes, it was the program that came out the week after Steve Gioia had won his first ever feature at the Oswego Speedway, and it was the 25th anniversary night of the track. And so, obviously, we don't have a whole lot of racing to talk about on this particular show other than to preview the ISMA show coming up at Lee this week, weekend that we'll get to here a little later. But you've seen that elsewhere. If you've been reading the press and the articles that Camden has put out, you kind of know what's going on with that, but we'll touch on it later. So I'm thinking as we get closer to Classic, and of course, we're still unsure of whether or not, you know, we're going to have a Classic, frankly. You know, I certainly don't want to, I don't want to try to guess, but we're cutting it close. If not, I mean, the no fans order is in effect till the 29th, which is 1 week before the Classic is scheduled to run. So I guess we'll have to see where that goes. But one of the things I've been thinking about is I still want to kind of do a look back at previous Classics and kind of build up to that regardless. And I've got an idea for Classic weekend. If the Classic doesn't run, I have an idea. I'm not going to tell you all what it is yet because I want to wait and see if I need to put it into action first. But I have an idea to at least have something sort of special for that weekend. But meanwhile, I thought it would be fun. Larry and I talked about this particular program, and I got to thinking, well, that was a pretty big occasion, Steve winning, because of course Steve Senior has been had been such a fixture at the track for so long in the family, and Steve Junior had started driving a couple of years before that, and this new car that he was running at the time was debuted that year in 1975, and it didn't take him too awful long to put the thing in victory lane. And Larry, I know that at the time you were helping Steve with some of the road shows that you would run, ISMA kind of shows, out-of-town shows, but you were working with Gary Albritton, I guess, at that time at Oswego, but still obviously great friends with the Gioias and all that. And so I guess I'm curious, first of all, we can start here. When Steve pulls into Victory Lane that night, and I mean, that was a it was a great race. It really was. I remember that race. I remember the fact that Ronnie Wallace was kind of the hot hand that year, but there was so much competition, and Steve had just really come into his own. When he finally pulls into victory lane, what are you thinking?
Well, to tell you the truth, Ron, first off, I want to thank you for having me back, because I'm in good company with Jeff Abels and
absolutely
Dave Schulich Jr. and Camden Proud. But to tell you the truth, I was looking over the pictures from the program that you sent me, and I really can't remember whether I was in the pits with Gary that night or if I was in the stands that night, because I was only like working with Gary on the 75 part-time that year.
Oh, okay.
But I do remember the after party.
There's always an after party, isn't there?
Yeah, especially on the first, your first win.
Oh, yes.
But I think what brought this to the forefront was a gentleman by the name of Scott Hoyt put a picture on the Talking Supermodified Past and Present page, I believe, last Sunday. And it was a picture of Steve's car from, I believe, Classic Weekend 1975.
I think you're right.
And my friend Pat York from Indiana tagged me on the picture. So we went back and forth about that, and Steve Pryor was the one that brought up the fact that this coming Sunday would be the 9th of August, would be the 45th anniversary of Steve's first win.
Which is why I decided that this would be a fun time to put this show together.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Oh, well, Steve and I went back and forth about, you know, what year it was, and because of the numbers that were on the car, which brought up the fact that he said something about being hand painted. And I always remember Steve's sister, Kathy, telling me that even back then, she was using contact shelf paper to make the numbers on the cars. I mean, this was before the vinyl graphics ever came around. She stumbled on that. And so she got into the conversation, and which dragged on and on and on, which was, it turned into a great thread on Facebook. It really was. And which brought up her asking me how I was coming along on the car. And I just told her, I said, well, early this spring, I said, I kind of doubted stuff was going to happen, and I would have really had to hustle to get the car done to bring back for old timers. So I think it was like March or April. I just decided to really slow down and take my time, and I'll work on getting it back for next year, which I'm pretty sure is doable. But
can't wait.
I remember Steve Pryor saying something about the graphic that was on the hood of the car that year, where it said "The Joya Chevy."
Yes.
And I remember on Steve's Graves car in 1997, Kathy had found the original template for that graphic and put it on the body of that Graves car when it was red for just only a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And I said, I thought she said she had it on a computer program, but I guess it was just a cardboard graphic that she had made up. And she got back to me and she said, I know I've still got it. I just hope I can find it. Oh. So I said, well, I'll give you till next year.
Yeah.
Well, she got back to me later, about a day or so later, and she sent me a picture of it. She still has it. So that's going to be on the car when it gets done. But, that was kind of a neat way that whole thread turned out. It was just, which brought me to the forefront of trying to find the program, which I could have sworn I had. And I couldn't believe that I didn't have that program.
So
I reached out to you.
It's just, if you're anything like me, you know, you put it over here. Or I bring some to my office sometimes, or you'll find it eventually when you're not looking for it, is probably what's going to happen.
And you and I talked about throwing a post or throwing something out while we were talking today about looking for it. And I had asked Mike Tynan, who purchased a bunch of programs from a guy in Canada earlier, I think late last year, earlier this year.
Okay.
And I asked him if he had it, and he said he didn't think so. And I just, first thing when I turned my phone on this morning, I got a message from him. He found it.
Oh, good. So
that's going to be on its way down to me here.
Perfect.
Hopefully next week. So, I've got the program from Steve's second win, which happened to be the week after.
Yeah.
But it was just funny the way that whole thread, just a picture of the car and Steve Pryor and me going back and forth, and then Kathy getting in on it. And it was fun to bring back that time period.
This is really what, and I love doing these shows, and I always hope that the fans that are listening enjoy them too. It's really just about two guys sitting around talking about the good old days and remembering, and there seems to be this renaissance that's gone on over the last few years where it comes to, obviously, the restoration of the, some of these older cars. And so in this particular situation, it's funny you mention that Graves car, because I remember when that car was red, and I always kind of look back and sort of try to visualize that car. I loved it when I saw it, and it always seemed like that was almost like a foreshadow of the throwback scheme idea, because I seem to remember that car resembling the 75 Gioia car or the 70s Gioia car very closely in layout. Am I wrong?
You know, as a matter of fact, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I remember that year we Steve had tried some different body configurations, and I believe Dave Iosso was hounding him all the time about, you got to do this, you got to do that. So I guess Dave built that whole red body, lowered the side panels down and made a bigger tail and things like that. But they put and when they wanted to do it back red, because the I believe about that time earlier that year is when the Nestle sponsorship had gone away. So there wasn't a whole lot left to put on the car. So they just did it all red.
Yeah.
But Kathy had found that cutout graphic for the hood, so that went on the car. But if I remember right, that body only lasted a couple weeks. There aren't very many pictures of the car out there of with it with the red body. I think it got wrecked like the week before Classic.
Okay.
And it was wrecked pretty bad.
Okay.
But
yeah, it's interesting because, like I said, when I hadn't thought about that particular, you know, livery, and when you mention it, now that I picture it in my mind's eye, it almost feels like it was a throwback before somebody invented throwbacks. Like it went, you know, it was almost identical, and I loved it. And look at thinking about that picture that Scott Hoyt posted. You know, one of the awesome things about those pictures is that in each of those pictures, there are 1,000 stories. Like each of us could look at that picture and it brings to mind different things based upon our memory and our, you know, perception of what that time or that day or whatever. And I look at that picture and I had kind of forgotten the particular color red. I mean, it was such a bright, brilliant red. I mean, that picture, and it's a great shot. And it's funny because you look next door and he's got, and Mike Rizzo was there. And if you look closely, it's almost like the cars were almost identical shades of red. That's one of those really interesting shots to look at, because you get a good profile of the car at that time. And I'm sure that probably has to be of some help to you as you're in the restoration phase.
Yeah. Yes. Stuff like that. I mean, when I looked at that picture, being someone's, I believe it was someone's photograph of like a private fan from that was in the pits. I've been trying to find pictures of what the dashboard looked like.
Okay.
And that was one of the few pictures I've ever seen where you can actually see the down dash into the cockpit of the car.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many little details that I mean, personally, I like to try and get correct.
Of course. Yeah.
But I mean, there's always, you're always looking for the original parts or as many as you can, which being a 45-year-old car, there aren't really too many original parts left. But I have been lucky that, was it last year, I believe, Steve got a hold of me and he said, I found the original oil tank.
Oh, wow.
And if you look at some of the pictures of the car, it was an oil tank, and it had like a viewing eye in the side of it so you could see the oil level. And it had a big red Kendall Racing Oil sticker on it. And when I went out to his house that day while I was home in New York, he picked it up and handed it to me as I pulled in the driveway. I said, yep, that's it. You can tell right off the bat.
Wow.
And he just got a hold of me earlier this spring, and he asked me if I'd found a radiator. And I said, no, right now I'm just using a, you know, something to mock up to work around. And he goes, I found a couple old radiators from that car up in the attic of Dad's garage while they were cleaning it out.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. I told him,
amazing.
With the interest in restoring old Supers, which to me, there is a lot more than I ever knew. I said, if you are, you know, whatever Steve Miller hasn't gotten from the old Indy Roadster of theirs and some of the other old parts, I said, there's a big interest out there in just, well, vintage parts.
Yes.
Because you're not going to be a millionaire selling them, but there is interest in, you know, you could make a couple dollars doing it. And so he's, well, I have to keep that in mind. But when he got a hold of me this year about the radiator, so that's great, because that was just one thing I didn't know about.
Sure. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, so when we think about this night, I'm just going to, just for those listening, because I'm sure most people, even if they have the program, they probably haven't looked at it in years or whatever, but I'm going to read the recap that was printed on page one about this race, just for everybody, and then that'll kind of create some conversation for us. So headline, Steve Gioia wins 25th anniversary feature. Victory lane shot, and it says, last Saturday night's silver anniversary show at the Oswego Speedway was a fun, festive, and memorable night for both young and old, as numerous old-timers were honored throughout the evening. Now, let's think about that all these years later. Now, Steve is an old-timer, right? He was a young one then. Young-timer. It was a young 22-year-old super-driving talent who really stole the show. Oswego Steve Gioia Jr. in his second full season of super-modified competition at Oswego masterfully wheeled his Gioia family roadster, number 9, to the biggest and most thrilling victory of his young career. The well-mannered speedster, who lives but just a few blocks from the Speedway, was given the honor of cutting the huge anniversary cake immediately following his win. So there again, for those, again, not around at that time, they had a giant cake and Steve got to make the first cut because he won the feature. For his splendid performance in the 45-lap run, Gioia earned a much-deserved $1,500 payoff. Norm Bacon displayed the green flag to start the grueling run with Scott Wilson, Canadian, and Jimmy Winks taking the early lead. Winks worked his way past Wilson and began opening a small lead over the remainder of the field. Now, Winks at that point was driving the former Austin Brothers 71 that he and one of the tow truck operators, I think his name was Robert Pirro, had purchased.
Lenny Pirro.
Yeah, Lenny, you're right. And it was, he numbered it 22. It was actually the 22-1 because his dirt modified was 221. And Jimmy was, he had won a lot of heats with the car, but he was competitive, but he just hadn't won a feature. So he began opening a small lead over the remainder of the field. On came Steve Gioia in the number 9, and he began to cut into Winks' lead. Jimmy put up a good battle, but Gioia was just running too good, and the number 9 was out front and leading by lap 15. Once in front, he clicked off consistent laps of 18.3. Now, again, we look at the period, right? The track record at that point was not even 18.3. In fact, in the four-wheel drive car that year, Freddie Graves went 18.247 in time trials for the Classic and broke the track record. So Steve's running 18.3, which, of course, the SPS cars are darn close to that. It's in some of their, like, their qualifying and such. And the Supers are almost 3 seconds faster. he was never really seriously challenged for the rest of the evening, so Steve kind of pulled away. But here's the deal. Further back in the pack came some real quick-moving veterans. Now, again, those of you who go back to that era with Larry and I will really remember a lot of this. But again, if you're younger, this is the level of competition we had. Steve's pulling away. Ronnie Wallace doing a fantastic job like he's done all year long with a 76, made the right moves and moved into second spot, followed closely by, check this out, Nolan Swift, Norm Macrith, Gary Albritton, Freddie Graves, and Johnny Spencer. Swift in the car that became Bentley's card table car the next year, actually. Norm Macrith, the Bally 5, which I don't know if he was running the Swift car or the Lindblad car that night. Gary Albritton in the red 75 Ralph Packing car that you were a part-time crew member of. and excuse me, Freddie Graves in his own Roadster, that little white 38 car that I love so much that he built for that year, and Johnny Spencer driving for Doug Duncan in the 07. Those guys were battling, trying to, you know, get to second. And, of course, Gioia pulling away. And then Wallace never caught him. He got to within 10 car lengths. That's about it. So Steve ends up winning. Ronnie finishes second. Let's see here. Where do we go? Albritton third. Swifty finished fourth. And Norm Macrith was in the Lindblad five. It says it here, finished fifth. Now, Jimmy Champagne, who had tangled with Jim Thompson earlier in the event, finished in sixth. Then it was, I'm going to read you the rest of the order here. And again, this is how much talent we had at that point, how much competition there was. Jimmy Wink, seventh in the 22. Freddie Graves, eighth. Eddie Bellinger finished ninth. Johnny Spencer, 10th. Johnny Logan in the Keenan Addy, 35, 11th. Gary Reichert, 12th in the All Super 78, as opposed to the convertible. Chuck Sipprich in the Tobin 21. Scott Wilson in the 27, which was the old Dates car, not the one Russ Gray bought. Brian Herb in the 11. Tommy Leeson in the 97. Denny Wheeler, 96. Ron Graves in the 7. That's the old Buckner 36. Sammy Carista in that orange 37. I love that car, too. Jimmy Thompson in the 18. Leon Weiske, the cowboy out of Michigan, in the 51. And that was a Swift right chassis. Jim Gray in the 00, which Jim would later go on to win a feature that year with the Kenny Reese car. Jim Muldoon in the Shamrock 13. That car was still around. And Mike Rizzo in the 34 rounded out the field. Swifty, Wilson, and Winks won the heats. Bellinger and Champagne the semi. And check this out, Johnny Logan won the consi. That's how much competition there was that year. That year, I still say, of all the years I've been going to Oswego, and with no disrespect meant to anyone in any other era, I'm just saying that year I think was the most rock-solid competitive year of racing in Speedway history, and you still had all the different designs, Larry. And for Steve to end up winning that race and then go on the next week to win again, and then to finish second to your car that you were working on, Gary Albritton in the Classic, really showed how far he had come in such a short time.
Yeah, that was you talk about 1975. You really had to be on your A game.
Yes.
To win a feature that year.
Yep.
There was, what, if I remember right, 11 different winners that year?
I think so, something like
11
that.
11 or 12?
Yeah, 8 or 9 at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was, what, 15, 18 shows maybe? So there was very few people that doubled up. Steve was one of them. Gary won a couple that year.
Yep.
And Classic. And it was so competitive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jim Gray, Fred Graves, Kemp Dates, of course, Champagne won. I mean, there were just a bunch of guys. Wallace won a couple, including his first. You know, there were a number of first-time feature winners that year, which they used to have. I don't know if they even still do it, but it was something called the $1,000 Club.
And I believe they still do that,
they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you get your first feature win and you join the $1,000 Club. That year, I mean, we had, again, I'm off the top of my head here, we had Jimmy Gray winning his first feature. Ronnie Wallace won his. I want to say Kempton Dates, but he might have been in 74. No, I think it was 75. I can't remember. Kemp either won in 74 or 75 for the first time. I can't remember. But he did win in 75. I just don't know if it was first. Freddie Graves had won before. We had Jim Gray, Ron Wallace. I know there were at least three. And I'm
Steve, Gary.
Steve, yeah, Steve.
Albritton.
Oh, yes, Gary. Yeah, that would have been his first that year. So, you know, we had five or six at least. And of course, the other relevance of this win that I thought was unique is, I believe, and again, I'd have to double check, but this may have been, because I don't remember if he won before Jimmy Gray or not. But whichever one of them won that year would have been the first, I believe, Oswego, New York feature winner.
I You know, I was thinking of that earlier today.
Yeah.
And I did not have time to go through the programs. Right off the top of my head, I think Jim Gray won first.
Okay.
But Steve was the first native Oswegonian.
Well, that
to
would have been true because Jimmy's a transplanted Canadian.
Jimmy was a transplanted Canadian, yep.
Yep. And, you know, and so when you look at what was going on that year, I mean, you know, I'm looking at Ivor the Driver, and, you know, this was always the gossip column. And as I get older here, I'm figuring out that Ivor didn't always get things right, but it was still fun when you were a kid to go back and look. And, of course, his predictions were always fun. Stelter was looking for a ride that year because Ray Sand ended up partnering with Buckner to run the 36. That was announced in this Ivor the Driver column. I love this stat, too. Ivor says, there was no doubt about it. Last Saturday night was Steve Joyeux's night. One, he drives car 9. Two, it was August 9th. Three, by winning, he became the 9th different feature winner of the year. So there you go. We had 9 at that point. Four, he moved into 9th in points. Five, Frank Hudson of Channel 9 News presented the feature trophy. And six, the little car on the huge cake was numbered 9. Now, that's
some
good
stat. I knew
there
was a lot of 9s involved in that day. Some of those I didn't remember until you just mentioned them.
Right there. Yeah, Ivor was on his game that week, old George. And, you know, talking about Jack Conley possibly making a comeback. Of course, the Miles Barker 93, Baldy Baker was driving it. They'd had a bad accident. We're off 3 weeks. We're expected to come back the night that this program, or the weekend that this program was printed for. Don McLaren was back ready to go after a bad crash with the one car, the beautiful car that Nelson Powell had. And Jim Cheney had purchased the Johnny Casey 88, which was the former Cheney 19 that the Holinsky brothers owned, that he had driven to some wins and so many good runs. And Jim ended up racing that car for the balance of the 75 season. And I remember he got 7th in the Classic. I mean, there was just so much going on and so much competition. And you still had, obviously, New England and Ohio and Michigan were all still big, super modified folks and a lot of cars. And I mean, you just look at the program, and I guess this program, yeah, the Invitational, which I used to love, the 25-lap Invitational was run the weekend this program came out, too. But it was quite a year that year. I mean, gosh, that time period, so many veterans, so much going on, still a lot of car owners, which we don't have anymore. Back then, you had a lot of guys who just owned cars and had drivers drive them, and that played so much of a part, Larry. You know, in Oswego history, even, you know, Ronnie Wallace comes to mind straight away because he won the championship that year in the Rainertown 76 car. So just an amazing year. But I want to know what went on at the after party. What can you tell us? That must have been quite the group.
Oh, it was fun. I remember we'd all gotten together. We all had cake and somebody said, we got to go party. And so somebody went out and bought some beverages, and Mark Tyler said it. Now, if you know the Tylers live, if you head toward the city down East Albany Street, they were the very last house before you go over the Albany Street Bridge.
Oh, okay.
And it was a big old farmhouse, a big three-car garage, and a huge yard. So we all go down there. Mark says, we can get on there. We can do what we want. Mom and Dad are camping. Nobody's home.
we had a
good party. There was everybody had a good time, if you know where I'm going with that. Gary Albritton is especially had a good time, but I won't get into that.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what time it was. All of a sudden we see a car pulling through the I guess it was the WT Grant, the Grant store still then, through the back road coming through, pulls into the driveway. It's Mr. and Mrs. Tyler. They came home a day early.
Oh, boy.
And there was a lot of people down there. But everything was cool. We had a good time. And if anybody knew Mr. Tyler, he jumped right into the party with us. So we had a good time with that. But
did that go on right straight to the next morning? Did you see sun up outside?
Oh, man. It was a good night. I know that.
That's great.
It was a lot of fun. A lot of people had fun that night. And there's always something about someone's first win.
It's great. I love seeing first-time winners. And even as a kid, I always really like seeing first-time winners. And I don't really know why at that time. I guess maybe just, you know, thinking it was so cool that somebody would be able to win for the first time.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, I know what goes into the cars and into, the sport. And so you understand all that came before and was sort of had to happen in order to get that first win. And Steve's career is kind of interesting in that sense. He got his first win, just a couple of years into his driving career and had a lot of success in those early years and won the Classic in, his third year or so, or fourth year of driving, third year, I guess. And then he was never able to win it again. And he always talks about that as you kind of look back and it's sort of, I'm glad we won it when we did, but at the same time, maybe too soon. Like it just was interesting that he was never able to get back to that, and it shows you, I think, how doggone hard that race is to win. But I think it also is a testimony to the fact that I think everything is of a period. So I feel like the joy is when Steve had his greatest success was when his dad was there, and it was still. The cost was still manageable enough so that everybody could sort of be on equal footing. The more it became specialized, the more expensive it got. You know, drivers like Steve that didn't have the sponsorship that the other drivers started to have or have the funding or whatever, it just gets harder and harder. But, Steve had a really good, 10, 15, year run or 20 years, maybe even where he was really competitive and of course won the track championship, I think in 85, but was still running for wins, right into the 90s.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, he was. I was just very fortunate that I was able to be with them for the last 7 or 8 years that he did race. That was something I'd look forward to all the years I worked on cars. That was something I wanted to do, was go work with Steve and his crew. All those guys were real good friends of mine. Dave Iosso, Billy Samuels, who went on to be a very successful car owner in his yep. own right. Mark Tyler, Mike Murphy, Lenny Legault, Chuck Ronaldo. Those guys, they were together for years and years, and I would just feel so lucky that they welcomed me to come in and work with them. It was just what, if you call it a career, but the amount of time I did work on the cars, I just felt very fortunate that they let me be part of that deal. It was just a lot of fun.
When did you start working with them in 76?
Most of the time I was with Steve out of town.
Okay.
Because I was always with somebody else and they always had a full crew and I never really wanted to, stick my nose where I didn't think it belonged.
Right. Okay.
So I was always, I always managed to get hooked up with somebody else or somebody who would ask me to come and, work with them that year. And it just, I think I've told you this story when we talked the last time, that after Jack Tobin folded his operation, Dave Iosso and I, we were working with Jack and his different drivers, with
yep.
Jerry and uh-huh. Jerry O'Neill and
Ordway
and Mike Ordway. Yes. And so we just said, well, let's go back and work with Steve. I said, well, he's got tire guys, he's got fuel guys, he's got this, I'll find something to do. And I just started to take tire notes and chassis notes and stuff, which
okay
to That seemed to really help them out. Steve told me once, he goes, I just love being able to go back through all these notes. He says, it really helps a lot. Well, we never really did that much of that. Now I've got a dedicated person to do that. So
yeah, that was my favorite. With the limited time I spent working on crews, that was always my favorite thing to do. I love the data. And that was something I could do that, I could understand and be consistent with. And and contribute. You know, I was never, I'm not a good mechanic. And so, you know, I'm not taking the rear end out of the car. So, you know, setting tire pressures and all that sort of thing and data, that was the way I could contribute. And it's important. And I think, of course, now we have all the computer-driven stuff that the big-time racers use. But a lot of the short track teams are still doing written notes, and I'm thankful for that because it's good to see that drivers still want to do that instead of investing in all the computer junk just for a dirt track car. That makes no sense to me.
you know, for sure.
But no, that was, I mean, that season, and it's fun to look back because when you just think of the personalities at the track at that time too, and you know, it was such an accomplishment for somebody like Steve, and Eddie had already won his first. Steve and Eddie kind of came in about the same time, and there was always this sort of Oswego versus Fulton rivalry thing that was sort of like a subtext of everything that was going on. There was that sort of, you know, thing, and Eddie had gotten the Grand Prix win, And probably maybe had won another one by then. I'm not sure. I think he did. I think he won another one or two in 75. And Steve finally getting that first win was, you know, was the first native Oswegonian, and which really was surprising. But when you think back, and it's a great history lesson for the newer folks that are a part of Oswego now, to realize that the first fair number of years when they were first converting over to the Supers, the out-of-towners were basically spanking everybody's butt, with the exception of maybe Swifty and, you know, one or two others for a few years until, you know, some of the other guys like your Champines and your Gibsons and your Andrews. But it was the Midwest guys that first were dominating. So to imagine that it took until 1975 for somebody from Oswego to win a super modified race there almost defies belief, but that's how it happened. And it was, that was a great win for Steve and for his bunch. And Steve Sr. had put so much effort into, and so much time into the Speedway and having cars there for other guys. I mean, that just had to be a really, really amazing moment for him to win with his son.
I don't think he lost that smile for a week.
I bet.
And then it came right back the following week when they won again.
Yeah.
And Mr. G was just such a laid-back, easygoing guy. It was so enjoyable to go. Well, at the time, I was living across the street. And that's how I got started going over there, helping Steve put this car together. And but he would, if he knew you didn't know what was going on, he explained stuff to you, and it was just so enjoyable to go over there. It was just, you know, it was a lot of fun, and they were just such great. And Mrs. Joya, that whole family was just amazing to be around.
Just great people. Yep. Great people. You know, and that was, I mean, gosh, when I think about it, actually, Steve, I think that second win that Steve got the week after, I think he beat Norm Macrith in the five. And I can remember Macrith chasing him down, and they were glued together basically. And I'm pretty sure that was that night. And again, the Bowleys, you know, one of the famous racing families, and they had run, you know, the old Swift car for a while and had gotten the Lindblad and had some trouble kind of getting that dialed in. And you know, I remember that night thinking, you know, Norm's going to pass him, and he never did. And again, an example of, you know, a veteran driver who couldn't pass the young one. Steve at that time was kind of the young buck, him and Eddie, I guess we should say. But you had Gary and he had some other guys, but Steve was the hometown guy. And, you know, I think that really endeared him to the fan base. And he was so classy and such a nice guy. And the Joyas were such great people, still are, obviously. And so, you know, that period of time, and then for him to win the Classic the next year, good night. I mean, that was just an incredible. And then after the Classic, to get to drive Jimmy's offset car for before Jimmy did in competition, you know, he didn't win the championship with it, but I'm sure that it planted some seeds for when they built their offset. And so for a couple of years there, boy, Steve got to do a lot of really amazing, check off a lot of really amazing boxes.
Yes, he did. I was later in 1976. I had hooked up with Kevin Lyons when Kevin bought the Buckner car from Ronnie Graves.
Yeah. Yep.
And he had never raced anything before, so there was quite a few weeks where we didn't make the features. We were always parked right next to the Joyas. So we'd go over and, you know, hang around with them. And I'll never forget that night that when Steve wrecked his car and he was going for the track championship with Jim Champagne. Yep. Jim came down and he said, if you want to run my new car, all you got to do is you got to bring your crew and your wheels and tires. And he said, you're more than welcome to the car because I don't want to win the track championship like this with you sitting on the sidelines. And so they did their thing and put the car together, and Steve went out and ran it.
Yep.
And when he came back in after the race, he walked back down to his pit and he goes, oh, he said, we're all going to be running for second. He said, that car is just amazing. And it wasn't even proven yet. And like you said, Jim hadn't even run it in competition yet.
No, and it showed the class that Jimmy had to make that offer. And I, again, if you're listening to this show and you want to hear Steve's recounting of that story in that period, go back, just go back to, in fact, you know what I'll do is I'll go ahead and I'll post this show, obviously, as the new show for the week, and then maybe on Sunday or so, or sometime tomorrow to space it out a bit, I'll go ahead and repost the Steve Gioia interview from last year that we did, and you'll, I mean, just to hear him tell that, and I remember that Jimmy had offered to give him, I think, 30% or whatever of what he made with the car. And Steve, it's like, no. And he's like, I can't take that. But, I mean, just Steve talking about what an amazing opportunity that was and how much he learned from that. But it just showed the class that Jimmy had to make that offer. And, of course, you know, it just had to be amazing for Steve to get in that car. And again, it showed what Jimmy thought of Steve too, because he wouldn't have put just anybody in that car, you know.
Oh, that's for sure.
So, you know, that was the respect level that Steve had. So, and you know, it's interesting you talk about Kevin and how you guys didn't make the feature for a little while he was kind of getting used to things. You know, that's another thing that, again, I think newer fans don't realize that there used to be 40 cars a night, you know, sometimes more. And, you know, you'd send 5, 10, 15 guys home. So you didn't come in as a rookie and just kind of buy your way to the top very easily at that point. You had to earn it and you had to build your skill set. And Kevin, I think, developed into a really good driver, but he, again, it started to get more costly, and you have a daughter that wants to be an Olympian, and
yes.
You know, so I mean, they were just it just never but I and in fact I can remember him running that Gioia backup car a couple of times a few years later when Steve had the newer one. I can remember him running the 99 a couple times in Concies. I think it was 79 Steve let him run the car when, you know, something would happen to the 19, or maybe it wasn't at the track or whatever, but
I think 79 is right, because that's the year Joe Gozick ran it once or twice.
Actually,
too.
That was 80. Joe and Donnie drove it in 80. 79, I remember Kevin.
Oh, was it 80 for Joe?
1980. I remember Kevin getting in it because it had because I love this body the most. It had the body with sort of the fins on the tail, you know, and that was the year Jim Cheney drove it in the Classic. Kevin had run it a couple of times, but that was the year Steve was still, they were still playing with the body or whatever on it. And maybe he had run it like that the year before, now that I think about it, maybe in 78, but it had a different look to it. And I always loved that look. And then they put the older tail back on it for the Classic. For Cheney. I think it was 79 that Kevin, I have the program. I'll have to go look it up. I'm pretty sure it was 79.
Well, you're right about the tail, because I've got the original fuel cell and tank. And what Steve did that one year when he wanted to create some more rear downforce, he cut the can, took about, I don't know, 6 or 8 inches off the top of the can and squished the fuel cell down. And then when he wanted to run the full fuel cell, we bolted the other piece back on top. And that's the same can that I've got with the car.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, that would be why they had he went back to the other tail for the Classic. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Because I always
save the expense of buying a new bladder, too.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So, you know, it was just, yeah, again, everybody, it was fun every year because everybody would come out with a slightly different body, a slightly different look, a slightly different color. It just, it was magic back in those days. It really was. And I think 75 was, I would argue 75 and maybe 76 were the apogee. You know, before, of course, you know, 77 was when Jimmy brought the offset out. And then, you know, that kind of started that whole revolution. So 75 and 76 were, I think, the last 2 years where, you know, it was still very much up for grabs. And you had so many different designs. And so, yeah, that was thinking about that year and what Steve accomplished and how quickly his star rose, it's pretty amazing, honestly.
Well, if you think back, 75, 76, people were getting away from the old indie roadsters. They were getting old and tired. Yep. People were somewhat copying them they were building their own frames using some ideas from those.
Yep.
And some ideas, a lot of the ideas came from Jimmy Champagne's wedge car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sure, everybody was taking and putting their own spin on what the car should be.
Yeah.
In fact, not long after I got this older car of Steve's, I was talking to him one day. I said, well, how much of a copy of your dad's old Curtis Roadster with this? And he goes, not much. He said, there's very few things that I used. The basic idea is the same, but I changed a lot of, you know, cross members and bracing and stuff like that. But to see the difference in the two cars of his I've got, It's amazing.
Well, of course.
You could tell when he built this one in 74 to 75, the emphasis was on safety, not saving weight.
Right, naturally. Right, yeah. Well, sure. Yeah, they were still very heavy cars, but I think I remember him saying in a program that year that the car that you have, that he won with, was a little bit smaller and lighter than the... Than the Curtis, the Indy Roadster.
So, yes.
So you can imagine how heavy those were. Think about it. It's,
well, there's a big difference between this car from 75 and the 1990 car that I've got.
Oh, of course. Well, you know, the amount
there's
of...
no comparison.
Yeah, the amount of knowledge. And that's what's really cool, I think, for us... us experienced folk who were around back then, you know, the veterans that we are.
Oh, you can go ahead and say it, older people.
No, because I'm not. I mean,
well, me anyway.
Some days I'm going to be 53. Some days I feel 50, and some days I feel 75. And, you know, it just, I'm not ready to be old yet. But those of us who were around, to see all of that transition into, and I'm not much of a gearhead. So a lot of the, I enjoy somebody, for example, you have two cars from different eras, right? So I enjoy just kind of being able to be there and have somebody like yourself saying, okay, notice how on this car, this was blah, blah, blah. And look at it over here. Look at how much, you know, and I enjoy learning about all that stuff because it's not kind of my wheelhouse, but it's amazing how far we've come in so many ways in the sport. Yet obviously with a lot of that technology came, you know, more costs too, which made it harder to, you know, so it's kind of one of those deals. But yeah, you're right. But that car, I remember when Steve brought it out in 75, that car was, it almost, it seems to me like he was fairly good with it almost out of the box. I mean, I don't think he was up front running for wins for a bit, but it seemed like he got pretty fast, pretty quick with that car.
I really don't. I can't remember that well with, you know,
yeah,
exactly what they were doing. You know, I like I said, if I wasn't in the stands, I was working with Gary on the 75, which I wasn't doing a whole lot. It was like, go for this and go for that and go get us some fuel and, you know, stuff like that. But because I was a raw rookie in the pits, I had very rarely even touched a race car before that. So,
well, you picked a good one to be a raw rookie with, because it won Classic that year. So you could say, hey, yeah, I won the Classic my first year working on a car.
First race I ever worked with Gary was at Fulton that year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, there's another whole thing. I love
first time crew member, first time win.
Wow.
Hey, this is fun. Yeah. I like this.
Yeah, see how easy that was?
Yeah.
I'm a genius now. yeah, dear IndyCar team, hire me. I love seeing pictures from Fulton, and I remember going there. I went there a number of times. My parents couldn't take me all the time, but we went up, you know, probably five or six times over the years. I love it as dirt, but I loved it way more as a paved track. And the Supers at Fulton just put on a fantastic show. And so I love going back and seeing photos from when they used to run there on, you know, Sundays. I love day racing anyway. I always have. And that always used to be, you know, a Sunday afternoon thing, at least for a while.
Running Sunday night on top of Saturday night made for a busy weekend.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, sure. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, I remember even back in those days, it seemed like people were saying, you know, we need more shows for the Supers, more places to race. Well, you know, there's an easy, you got a back-to-back, but it's only 15 minutes up the road or whatever, so it's an easy thing to do, and yet it's not really easy because you still have to prepare the car, and I'm sure the setup was different even back then with a wing, and so I'm sure it was still a lot of work. But you know, that was once Fulton stopped running Supers, it seemed like from that point forward was when the class started to a very slow. I mean, you had numbers of ISMA shows, obviously, but then it started, you know, somewhere in there, somebody got the idea that ISMA should do its own thing and, you know, whatever. But it was such a nice deal to have a Saturday-Sunday kind of thing going on where you could run them twice and not feel like you had to, you know, go out of town more than, you know, half a dozen other times during the year or whatever they used to do. Because it kind of made each of those races more special, I feel like, too. And it wasn't so hard back then to travel around.
Yeah. You know? Exactly.
Yeah. But fun stuff. That was, you know, just a fun look back at, those of you who listen to the show, obviously, if this is interesting to you, let us know, because I'm happy to do more of these shows where we take a program and kind of talk about what was going on in that moment. And certainly Larry is a guy, Mike Silliman is a guy. There are probably a number of guys who have enough of the programs that we could, you know, we could just pick one and both study and then come and have some fun. But, you know, there's just not much going on currently. So it's an opportunity for us to look back and enjoy kind of a where are they now or what was going on. And this just sort of fell in our laps with Larry and I because Larry was looking for that particular program. So it just became a great idea since it was going to be the 45th anniversary. Gosh, I'm sure that makes Steve feel real old.
that subject was approached in the thread on that, the picture of the car. But another reason I wanted to do something, because I was going to put something on Facebook Sunday.
Please do.
Commemorating the 45th anniversary, just to make everybody feel old. Eric Kingsley had gotten it. He asked me asked a comment. He goes, how about some pictures of the car, the way it sits, which is one thing I was planning on doing. I've got a couple pictures of it. I mean, it's just in the garage. It's on wheels,
yeah,
but it's just got a cardboard body on it. Like you saw that day, yeah, when you were at my house.
Yep.
But just to, you know, I kind of wish I'd have had more time to work on it this summer, but there's having limited resources, a lot of stuff I have to farm out. And the guy that does a lot of work for me, he builds dirt late models in our area.
Right.
So this time of year is busy for him, and I don't like to bother him because he's been way too good to me. And so and then, like I said, with the current conditions in the area here in New York, I didn't want to push the envelope to try and get it done too quick. So now I can take my time. I'll get back at it here. I've been on and off a little bit. We get a rainy day, I'll spend the day in the garage, but I want to be able to come fall when things slow down, and winter when I don't have to mow the lawn, take my time and get back, get the body built. And because there's still some parts I've got to try and locate. I thought I had one, and I may still have. I just haven't heard back from the people yet. But just some parts I need that aren't visible, I still need them, and that's me.
Do you have a list that that we could post, that we could share, so maybe folks can see it and say,
well,
hey,
the
I can
one
get
the
this
one part
that
I thought I had, and I still may, but I do need a torque tube.
Okay, so those
and, which
listening.
Is something I didn't know until last fall when I finally got the thing to where it was, I was able to roll it.
Okay.
Get it on wheels. My wife and I rolled it out into the driveway, and I couldn't figure out why the rear end kept rolling forward. Well, there's no torque arm on these older cars like there is on the newer one that I've got.
Oh, okay.
It's the torque tube where the little drive shaft goes up out of the in and out box into the rear end. And I got thinking, why is this doing this? So, no torque arm, you need a torque tube. So, yeah, I've been on the look for one of them. I thought I had one, and I may still have, but
And then
naturally, like I've told you before, all the good stuff is in New York. I can't even go to New York now.
Yeah, so, that's true. Yeah, that's
so,
right.
I mean, there's a lot of parts up there. I'm trying to round up. So if I ever do get up there, I'm going to need to make sure I got my truck empty because I've got to come back with a lot of stuff.
Is the torque tube of the period? In other words, is there a particular torque tube that you're looking for?
I'm not really sure. I know it needs the bolt to a Hellebrand rear end.
Okay.
But I've got one piece, the small piece that bolts onto the in and out box, which I have.
Okay.
But I need the two pieces that come off the rear end and go into the smaller piece into the in and out box. I mean, I'm just looking. It's not like I'm coming back up next week.
No, but
so
again, if anyone has one,
yeah,
that's listening to this show, or if anyone knows somebody who might have one, we're trying to track this down. And I know everybody goes through this to a degree who's restoring these cars, because again, there are a lot of parts and whatever that aren't made anymore. Maybe they had to be machined even back then, and you gotta so I think, you know, Kemp and Dates went through that to a degree with the restoration of the Red Creek Rocket that he won the championship with. And, you know, of course, as we mentioned before, that car was scheduled to make its debut at Old Timers Night this year, which would have been, I think, actually this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. And that's obviously not going to happen now. So that car will make its debut at some point next year. And the book on Kempton that his family is putting together is also well in progress. And I think will come out next year as well. So
I can't wait to read that. That's going to be a good one.
It's going to be amazing. I've seen a lot of the ingredients. I'm sure I haven't seen nearly all of them, but you know, I got to go through a lot of the scrapbooks and such that Faye had kept, and just some of the photos and all of that and things that it's funny because, and I'll give you a quick example. I had no idea that Kemp had ever driven a rear engine car, and it turns out he did. He ran Warren Schoberlein's car at a race at Shangri-La. And I never knew that, but there was a picture in one of the books of him in that car. And then I actually found the program where I think it was either Frolito or Bill Foley, whoever was writing for the program at that time, was talking about that race and mentioned Kemp driving that car. And I said, wow, okay, with Shangri-La. And it's just those little things that fascinate me. Probably half the listeners don't care. But it's a little small part of you know, Kemp's career or whatever. So I think you're going to see a lot of things in that book that probably a lot of people have either forgotten or just didn't know. Because Faye was so meticulous about keeping stats and you know, photos and all kinds of stuff at pit passes. Just amazing. I can't wait. It's a scrapbook kind of idea is what it is, but it'll also be sort of Kemp's career told in stories. I was very humbled to be able to write the foreword for the book. And so, you know, I know there are going to be a lot of drivers contributing their own stories and such. It's going to be an amazing book when it comes out. So, yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
That'll be fun. I was always disappointed. I'm disappointed that it can't happen this year, but I understand why. And I, much like with you, I'm all about these things being right. You know, you want to make them right. You don't want to rush them. You want them to be right. Yep. It's like I'm just dying for Jimmy's rear engine car to be done. You know, and Jim Paternoster, I know Jim. I've known him a long time. And, you know, again, I'm sure there are a ton of little parts or whatever that had to be either made or sourced or, you know. And so I know when Jim finally gets that car done, it's going to be amazing. So,
well,
you know.
Thank you for mentioning his name, because I was going to try and work that in. He was a lifesaver for me here earlier this spring. I had a torsion stop strip on me, and I was dead in the water for a while. I tried two or three of these older vintage sprint car, IndyCar, super modified guys. Nobody had a torsion stop like what I needed. Okay. Jimmy came through for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He said, this thing's been laying around my shop for years. I'll send it down. So, I mean, I got to give him a shout out for that, because that's exactly what I needed. And I was going to be dead in the water, because I would have really had to jerry-rig something to keep that one corner of the car up in the air until I could find one, which wasn't going to make me happy, because
right.
I'm a stickler as much as I can for original stuff or period correct things.
To make it that, yeah. And
but I'm nowhere near the caliber of Jimmy when it comes to restoring a race car. He's head and shoulders above anything I could do.
Jimmy's amazing.
Because he's got a complete shop,
yeah.
And he's got the capability to do things that I can't.
Right, exactly. It's a gift, and Jimmy's been around forever and, you know, did a little bit of racing himself, but he has helped so many people in Oswego over the years. Supers, owned small blocks, limiteds for a while, and just, you know, he's been a part of a lot of people's racing efforts for a long time up there. And so, yeah, I have nothing but respect for Jim and thankful that that he's doing this restoration of Jimmy's rear engine. But yeah, I mean, it's great. You've got all these people that are, I think, Martels have Jimmy's last car, the 89. You've got, Pat York, I think, still has some cars.
York. He got rid of the Super.
Okay. He sold
the All Britain Richmond car a few years ago. It's in a World of Speed Museum in Oregon.
Oregon, wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Steve Miller.
I mean, there's a bunch.
Randy Mapus has a couple at the Fremont, Ohio Hall of Fame there.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing the amount. And the farther along I got into doing my first car, the more and more interest I found that there is in these things.
Yeah.
And that's, which is blew me away, because I just had no idea. I only got my first car from Rayvals because it was just sitting in one of his dad's old trailers behind his house.
Sure.
And I said, what are you going to do with the car? He said, why, you want it? I said, well, I hate to see it just sit there and rot away to nothing. And me being the stickler that I am, I got the car, brought it home. All I got was a frame, oil tanks, couple oil tanks, front axle, some hubs,
yep.
odds and ends like that out of his storage warehouse, and I traced down the original rear ends that came with the car from Steve to Brian Sweeney to Craig. And I wound up going all the way back to Toronto later that summer to buy one of them.
Wow.
So just to make sure, because their 18-inch offset rear axles were and rear ends were, you know, fairly common. But if I tracked it down, I wanted one of the original rear ends. And the one thing I kicked myself for is not buying both of them.
Oh, yeah,
because I could have turned around and either had a spare or sold the other one to somebody. And I've kind of lost track of the guy that had it. Now I know who he is, but for me to have to go back up that way is out of the question.
It's amazing the and of course the detail. If you want to do it right, it just takes a while. And that's I think somebody has the old 04 that Jim Cheney drove in Conium, the newer the last non offset car from.
Yep, well, that thing's kicked around to a few. That's changed hands almost as many times as my older Joya car has.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's been through four, five, six different people.
So I hope that they're going to restore
and
that.
There's a gentleman in Connecticut that earlier, just a couple months ago, got his hands on the last Buckner Cyprus Super.
Oh.
The one that 1980? Was the real long wheelbase car with the engine that tipped to the right.
1980
car. He found that up in New England someplace, and he got his hands on an older Graves chassis that he's been trying to track down the lineage to that one too.
Okay. Wow. So, that's awesome.
Oh, this guy's got race cars up the wazoo.
Well, it's
he's got old modifieds. He's redoing right now one of Len Bowler's old blue number threes.
Oh.
I think the one with the Cavalier body on it.
It's
a newer one, but it's still one of Bowler's cars.
Yeah, 1980.
Richard Bellman, I believe his name is.
Okay.
Find him on Facebook. He's got some nice stuff.
That's
he's
great.
Been looking for parts and, you know, trying to track down the lineage to this Graves car and the Buckner car he's got. It's amazing the amount of interest there is in these.
Well, and that's I love it because again, it it's important. I think the super modified division is a division that's had a lot of history to it. It's a division that's had a lot of depth to it over the years. So many drivers have been in supers and gone on to race other things quite successfully. The family lineage through, you know, the whole of super modified racing, a lot of generational. And obviously the cars themselves have changed over the years so much. And so I think it's great that there's really not, you know, you don't have a super modified Hall of Fame. I wish I could just hit Powerball because I would start one. But
you and a lot of people, Tom.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think those of us who value the history, you know, I love that all you guys are redoing the cars. You know, I can help with keeping it alive on this show. You've got obviously, many people who have given their time and effort in to help the restoration of these cars. You don't want to lose all of that because, I don't think the racing world as a whole today really understands. It's funny. I've talked to a few people over the last couple of weeks. Families that have younger drivers coming up in the sport or whatever, and you know, you see them at a racetrack or whatever, and it's like, how's it going? And you start, do you know what a super modified is? Yeah, I've seen those on TV. Aren't they the cars with the wings? It's like, yeah, well, so they kind of know, but of course they have no idea of all of this history that we talk about. And I think that's kind of a shame. And now that we're not doing a program anymore at the Speedway, you don't have that weekly documentation and photos and all of that. I think to to sit and do this and kind of go back and talk about different drivers, different situations, different it brings that all back alive again. And if it inspires somebody to go find a car and restore it, well, that's amazing, right? That's,
well, we need I have to say, I've got to thank you so much for this, because it's been fun having the privilege to do this show with you a second time now, and even the first time, but it just keeps me connected to the Speedway.
Well, that's what we're all trying to do, especially this year.
It just makes the week, okay, I got to go sit on the front porch and listen to Tom, you know, and it doesn't matter who you've got. It's the connection.
Well,
you know,
that's
about
the thing.
Supers and,
you know, I've kind of gotten to the point in my career at doing all this racing stuff that I've been blessed to do for all this time where I do it because it entertains me, but I also hope, obviously, that it entertains somebody else too, right? It's kind of like, you know, this is my golf game. And, and you know, it's always great to know that somebody else is as excited about it as I am, because that's the
whole
point.
Even if you don't have anybody else, you've got me.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, yeah, I need a co-host, because Camden is out of the country right now, and he's over in Norway or wherever, and having
he's
a great
there?
Time. Yeah, he's still there, as far as I know. Yeah,
wow.
You know, well, you got a girlfriend over there, see, and you're 21 and 22, whatever he is, and you got HC. You got, so yeah, he can work from over there. A lot of his work is social media related and online and whatever. So
good for him.
He's having a good time. He's like, I told him, man, you know, it's like ain't nothing for you to come back here for. We're a mess over here, you know. So no, it's fun just to sit and talk supers and talk the old days. And yeah, I would love to see. I'd love for other people to get a chance to see what you know, see the car, because again, I mean, I could stare at that car all day, because it's a time machine for me, and I'm sure a lot of other people would appreciate that as well. You know, and so we'll look forward to that post on Sunday, and I'll reshare the Gioia interview show as well for all of you. If you missed it, I want to start going back and resharing some of the archive shows anyway. And you can get them all if you go to Race Chaser Radio. They're all there. In fact, I actually had a separate have it still SoundCloud page for Inside Groove. I stopped loading the shows, the newer shows, onto that page a while back, just because, again, I only have so much time, and people seem to like hearing different shows of mine that we produce. So I'm just going to put them all in one place, but you know, they're there. And if somebody wants to hear a particular interview again or whatever, just let me know in the message and I'll send you the link for it. It's not hard to just go copy and paste the link so you can get it. And I'll start putting out some of the archive shows again for everybody, because we've built a nice audience, and a lot of people probably weren't around for us in the earlier shows. So I'll start putting them back out just kind of randomly midweek or whatever, off and on, you know, just recurring, so people can get a listen to them again. But yeah, this has been fun, Larry. I enjoyed it very much, and obviously appreciate you so much for the time that you put in to restore the Gioia cars and keep the name alive. You know, Steve and the Gioia family were, I consider them one of the founding families, and they were one of the first major ones, if not the first major family from Oswego to make that kind of an impact. I can't think of another in terms of, you know, a team, certainly the Carusos, but you know, they built the place, right?
The Crusettis weren't far behind.
Well, that's true. Yes, you had. I forget. Yeah, again, you. This
yep.
is why
Marty,
it's good.
Marty
I have
was
you
there
guys,
from real
yeah.
early.
Yep.
And
you're right.
He was up until I think 65 or 66 with cars.
Yep, that's true. Yeah. So, but I think Steve, I think the Gioias may have been the longest tenured. You know, for as far as the number of years they were active with a car, between Steve Sr.'s time and then, of course, you know, Steve Jr. carrying on, and Steven, you know, all that time they've been around, and they're still involved. So,
yep.
You know, and that's great. I just love seeing that. And, you know, obviously over the years, more and more locals got into it. Yeah, just a, What a period it was. The 70s were a great time, and 75 was a magic year, and it's fun to, I think, to go back and relive some of that year. So, you know, wish you the best, Larry. Obviously, continue good health, and look forward to seeing what you post on Sunday, and also to your continued progress on the Joya Chevy, so we can get that thing ready, and maybe we can debut the Rocket, the Joya car, in 2021, and life can be back to normal again, hopefully.
Yep, that's the plan right now. We'll see what happens. I hope so.
Well, again, appreciate all your time, Larry, and we'll do this again down the road. That is Larry Trinket. This, of course, is Inside Groove. We're going to step aside when we come back. We'll talk about 55, because this is the 55th show that we've done since we brought it back. It's number 55, and we know a pretty famous Canadian who ran that number. We'll talk about who else. Actually, you know what? I'm going to stop myself in mid-outro here, because I got Larry Trinket with me. So let's do this together here. 55, Larry, Kenny Andrews, Paul Reichman.
Jimmy Brown. Paul Reichman. All Canadians.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Well, Dave Morton in the Reichman car one time.
Jerry O'Neill ran it one night. Paul's Graves car, yes.
Did he? Okay, 55. So Jerry, of course, now it's Keith Champagne. He's the current iteration of the 55. Who are we missing? Anybody? Any 55s? Going once?
I'm kind of lost.
Okay. So there's your list of 55s. If you can add to that list, please feel free to do that in the comments wherever you're listening to the show. I know Robert Metcalf's always busy. He likes to come up with the beat the host, and he's starting to do it on a fairly regular basis, which is awesome. I love it. But I know unless you dig something up, we've already talked to you, so you and I are both out. So let's see who else can add to that list. But there's a few for you. All right, we're going to take a break, and then I'll close this thing up. We'll be back with more of the Inside Groove right after this.
Is your job sucking the life out of you? Wake up. You can do something else. Information technology. I know what you're thinking, but I'm not a math or science person. No excuses. No problem. It's not rocket science. It's my computer career. Helping people start an IT career is their thing. If you don't absolutely love what you do, go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You can start your new life as an information technology professional in as little as 4 months. Attend classes on campus or live online just 2 or 3 times a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire their students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited, and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so go take the career evaluation now at mycomputercareer.edu. Mycomputercareer.edu. That's mycomputercareer.edu.
Welcome back to Inside Groove as we finish up this program for another week. We actually have some racing to talk about. Lee Speedway is hosting the Ali Silva Midsummer ISMA Classic this weekend. It's the 20th annual event. It is actually taking place tonight. And again, if you haven't been paying attention to the roster, you'll get all the big names from ISMA. You got Russ Wood, you got Pearlie, you got John McKennedy, you got Mike Ordway Jr. You're going to have Otto Sitterly taking back over the controls of the 7 from Smoke Johnson, who drove it at the Sandusky High Miler Classic. You've got Bose, you've got Jeff Abold, you got Ben Seitz in the Sewell Racing 32. Brandon Bellinger scheduled to race. I think one of the locks going to be in action. I think that I'm not sure which one, but one of them will be in action. You got Dave Danzer in the 52 going to run. Jeffrey Battle going to race. Bobby Timmons, the third, making his debut in the big blocks with the family number 13. I had heard Joe Gozick was going, but I can't confirm that, so we'll just leave that as a question mark. But ISMA finally going to get their season underway in New England with the Midsummer ISMA Classic, Ollie Silva Classic. And again, that is coming up as we finish up the show. It's coming up tonight. So we hope to have some audio from there. If somebody from ISMA would take the time to get us the winter view or get us top three, preferably, so we can air them on next week's show, we'd be happy to do that. But we'll try to do our best to keep you up to date with what happened up there and see who we can get from there to be on the program next week. So we've also got, I think it's Star Speedway has got the small blocks supers in action, and several of our guys actually down there for that, I think. So should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to covering all of that on next week's Inside Groove, which will be episode 56. I've got a few choices for where I'm going to go with drivers for that, but you know, there have been several of those over the years. Not a large number, but certainly a fair number of 56s over the years. So we'll talk about all of that when it comes by. I want to once again thank all of the sponsors who helped make this show possible. Rich Worth, J&S Paving, Sean Cathcart and the staff at Skip's Fish Fry, and of course, Jeff West and IndyPerformanceComposites.com. Be sure to let them all know, if you haven't already, that you really appreciate them sponsoring the show. It certainly helps, for sure. Want to thank all of you for listening. I hope that you are safe, and hope that you have a great weekend and a great week next week. And we'll talk to you again next Friday when episode 56 of Inside Groove comes by. Until then, I'm Tom Baker. Thanks for listening. So long.
You've been listening to Inside Groove, powered by IPC Indy, creating performance parts and solutions for the automotive, aerospace, and communications industries. Find them on the web at www.ipcindy.com. Inside Groove is a Race Chaser Media production. For more exciting and passionate motorsport content, follow Race Chaser Media on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, and visit racechasermedia.com. The opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, affiliates, or marketing partners of Race Chaser Media. No part of this show may be reproduced in any manner without the expressed written consent of Race Chaser Media. Thank you for listening.